this is Marion and Dewey the dog. We're in the Love Shack at the Greenville Drive-In. You're listening to WGXC ACRA, Hudson Catskill.
Turn out for a special performance from Leah Bertucci, Sunday, September 18th at Opus 40 in Saugerties. Bertucci is performing on electronics, voice samples, and multi-channel radio using four low-range FM transmitters provided from Wavefarm and used to send audio throughout the performance to radios installed within the labyrinth walls of Opus 40 to create a spatialized sonic gesture. Audience members are urged to circulate among the Opus 40 grounds to hear, to make their own live mix of the performance. Bertucci is working with Ben Vita, Zach Layton, and Victoria Ketty on the project. It's Sunday, September 18th from 4:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Opus 40 in Saugerties. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Cochrane Media of Cairo, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about anything you hear here.
Will Solomon reports in the Times Union about a radical anti-vaccine group holding a rally September 10th in Columbia County as vaccines save people from COVID-19, monkeypox, polio, and other diseases around the world. The festival in a field at Claverick's Cowboy Crossing Farm is being promoted by Do We Need This?, a Columbia County-based group that spread vaccine misinformation during the pandemic. The group also had a booth at the Columbia County Fair this year, promoting misinformation about vaccines. Patrick Connors, a Hillsdale resident who works on VaxFacts, a semi-regular newsletter that reports on COVID disinformation activity in Columbia County, said, and I quote, "Opposing vaccination and other public health measures to counter COVID-19 and spreading disinformation put the health of our entire Columbia County community at risk, particularly the elderly and other people with health conditions. DWNT are in effect advocating for their own freedom to catch and transmit COVID and other dangerous diseases to vulnerable community members," end quote. Richard Harrison, owner of Cowboy Crossing Farm, claims that, and I quote, "The Columbia County Health Freedom Movement does not have a right-wing connection at all," end quote. Connor says that is also misinformation. He said, and I quote, "On the national level, there have been a growing overlap between the anti-vax movement and the far right, and we're seeing the same here in Columbia County. Anti-vaxxers, some of whom support causes like organic farming and the environment, are making common cause with the far right and vice versa," end quote. One of the speakers at the Claverick event is Bobby Ann Cox, who has falsely claimed about the January 6, 2021 attempted coup that, and I quote, there is evidence coming to light that radical groups like Antifa, BLM, and other agitators were probably there and may have planned it as a distraction so that Congress could certify a fraudulent election while everyone focused on the media hysteria, end quote. That is not true. Right-wing groups backing former President Donald Trump organized and participated in the attempted coup trying to overturn fair election results. Michael Sesselman, a Columbia County-based public health professional, said, and I quote, it's sad that people at the festival will be spreading and supporting lies about vaccines and spreading conspiracy theories. Reducing rates of vaccination increases the likelihood that we will see more outbreaks of preventable illness like measles and possibly polio, end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Mid-Hudson News reports that a recently released report from the Pattern of Progress Group examines the gap between wages and the cost of rental housing for those living in the nine-county Hudson Valley region. Report found that a single person earning an average wage cannot afford rent and modest living expenses, including those living in Columbia, Dutchess, Greene, and Ulster counties. A renter making an average wage does not make enough, falling short on their financial obligations by $336 to $2,908, depending on the county in which they live. In Columbia County, the gap is $438. In Greene County, it is $578. The outlook is equally difficult for families in rental housing and worse for single parents. Pattern for Progress CEO Adam Bosch said of the findings, quote, too many people cannot afford their rent and living expenses without considerable help. The people who are struggling most work in grocery stores, schools, medical facilities, restaurants, and other necessary jobs that make our region viable and attractive, unquote. The Out of Reach report uses county-by-county data from the National Low Income Housing Coalition, which examines hourly wages and fair market rents to measure the affordability of rental housing. Affordability is calculated using the standard that no individual or family should spend more than 30% of its total monthly income on housing. Pattern for Progress examined data for nine counties, including Columbia, Dutchess, Greene, Orange, Putnam, Rockland, Sullivan, Ulster, and Westchester counties. These nine Hudson Valley counties ranked in the top 20 of all counties statewide in terms of a monthly renter gap, with Rockland, Putnam, Westchester, and Orange landing in the top 10. Read more about this story at MidHudsonNews.com.
Nolan Hicks and Zach Williams report in the New York Post that Governor Kathy Hochul announced an emergency expansion of the state's polio vaccination efforts on September 9th after more of the deadly virus was found in Long Island wastewater. The state's health commissioner, Dr. Mary Bassett, said in a statement, and I quote, on polio, we simply cannot roll the dice. If you and your child are unvaccinated or not up to date with vaccinations, the risk of paralytic disease is real. Polio immunization is safe and effective, protecting nearly all people against disease who receive the recommended doses. Do not wait to vaccinate, end quote. Hochul's order allows pharmacists, paramedics, and midwives to dispense the vaccine now. Polio was effectively eliminated in the United States in the 1970s following decades of aggressive vaccination. Now, though, only 79% of New Yorkers are vaccinated for polio. And you can read the full story in the New York Post.
Brian Hubert reports for the Daily Freeman that plans are underway to restore the historic Ann Oliver House for the Dr. Margaret Wade Lewis Black History Research and Cultural Center in New Paltz. The structure was built by the 19th century New Paltz black carpenter Jacob Weinkoop. As Lewis, an attorney and a New Paltz town board member, serves as the steward for the historic 1885 house at 5 Broadhead Avenue. Lewis estimates it would take $500,000 to restore the building to serve as a cultural center housing museum exhibits on black history in the Hudson Valley while also offering mental health services. Quote, I want to see it happen so people can see black history as American history as opposed to separate, unquote, Lewis said. Quote, this is the history of the Hudson Valley, unquote. A New Paltz native, Lewis is the daughter of the late Dr. Margaret Wade Lewis, who helped to found the Black Studies Department at SUNY New Paltz. Lewis said that over the years, the house fell on rough times and was nearly demolished. The house has not been lived in for a while, except for squatters, and property maintenance has not been done, but Lewis has already started to make improvements to the property, she said. The builder of the house, Jacob Weinkoop, was born free in 1829 to Thomas and Jane Deo Weinkoop, two formerly enslaved people. Weinkoop would go on to serve in the U.S. Civil War alongside Anne Oliver's husband, Richard Oliver. Both men survived the war, but Oliver would die on his way home after contracting malaria, leaving Anne widowed. By 1885, Weinkoop was a well-established carpenter and built the house for Oliver. Weinkoop lived into his 80s and is buried in the Ulster County Veterans Cemetery. Just over half a dozen homes built by Weinkoop survive today. Quote, "There are seven houses created for black people that survived, and the fact that this is one is going to be owned and operated by black people is significant," unquote, Lewis said. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
CNN reports that Republican Joop Deel takes on Democratic State Attorney General Maura Healey to become governor of Massachusetts this November. Deel defeated businessperson Chris Daugherty by backing former President Trump more wholeheartedly during the primary campaign. Massachusetts, while known as a liberal state, often elects Republicans as governor, with only one Democrat, Deval Patrick, getting elected over the past 30 years. Current Republican Governor Charlie Baker decided not to seek re-election this year, but the former president looms over this election. Trump said of the Republican candidate, and I quote, "Joop Deel is a true patriot, a believer in low energy costs and our independent energy policy," end quote. Deel refused to debate his Republican opponent in the primary. Daugherty said of Deel, and I quote, "He's too extreme for our state. He pursues conspiracy theories. He has beliefs that are just not consistent with the state of Massachusetts," end quote. He added, and I quote, "It makes him not electable," end quote. Healey, on the other hand, would be the state's first elected woman governor, as well as the first out lesbian governor there. Read more about this story at CNN.
The Berkshire Eagle reports that Moody Bridge, the span that crosses the Hoosick River at Route 7 and Simmons Road in Williamston, Massachusetts, will be closed to all vehicular and pedestrian traffic beginning at 6 p.m. September 16th until 6 a.m. on September 19th. The backup dates are September 23rd to September 26th. The detour around the closed bridge will follow Route 2 Mohawk Trail to Cole Avenue to North Hoosick Road to Bridges Road to Sand Springs Road. Road closure is necessary to allow workers to resurface the bridge, which will take a couple of days to complete and set properly, according to the State Department of Transportation. Town officials are asking drivers to plan accordingly and use the alternate detour route during the bridge closure. Read more about this story in the Berkshire Eagle.
Mid-Hudson News reports that Johanna Contrias, a deputy county executive in Ulster County, was sworn in as acting county executive on September 9th. She temporarily takes over for Pat Ryan, who resigned after being elected to take over the final weeks of Antonio Delgado's term in the 19th Congressional District in Congress. Delgado resigned to become Lieutenant Governor. Contreras said, and I quote, "I am committed to building upon the success of County Executive Pat Ryan's administration and continuing our work to support green growth and economic opportunity, provide financial relief to residents, and govern with transparency and fiscal responsibility. I have always centered the values of equity and inclusion and will continue to do so as acting Ulster County Executive," end quote. Contreras won't have the role for long, though, as a special election will be held to fill out Ryan's term. Ulster County Comptroller Mark Gallagher, former State Senator Jennifer Metzger, and Deputy County Executive Mark Ryder so far have expressed interest in running. Republicans so far have not put forth any names as possible candidates to run for Ulster County Executive. Read the full story at Mid-Hudson News.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Renewable Weather Forecast. which we start each day with the price of fossil fuels in Greene County. The Gas Buddy website says the Citgo in South Caro is selling gas for $3.84 a gallon. That's the lowest price available. The air quality forecast is next, and it's a 21, just up from 18 on Sunday, still in the very good range. The UV index, though, is a 5, which is considered moderate, and you should consider a hat, sunglasses, and an SPF 30 sunscreen if you're out in the elements for too long. National Weather Service in Albany says Monday there's a 20% chance of showers after 3 p.m. It'll be partly sunny before that with a high of 76, a low around 63 Monday night, with a 80% chance of rain then. Showers are also likely on Tuesday. There's a 70% chance with a high of 75 and a south wind around 5 miles per hour spinning local windmills. Tuesday night should be clear with a low around 55, and then Wednesday should be sunny with a high of 73 and a low around 50. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears. On Monday, September 12th, tune in to all sorts of creative community voices on the air at 90.7 FM WGXC, including at 9 a.m. on the WGXC Morning Show. Melissa Everett, Executive Director of Sustainable Hudson Valley, talks about all the events they're doing for the Hudson Valley Climate Solutions Week from September 17th to 25th, including one event at Basilica Hudson in Hudson. And then at 10 a.m., it's time to hop on the Afrosonic Taxi, this week with tracks from Sita Muran, Usa Mahashi, and Grupo Lakito, among others. Brenda Donegan is playing favorites at 11 a.m. live from the WGXC Hudson studio. Then at noon, after the local news, it's time for the Deep Three Show. Tracks this week from Jessica Lurie Ensemble, Claudia Antonelli, and Margaret Brower, among others. There's brand new music from around the world at 2 p.m. on the Vital Weekly Show, including works this week from Maya Bernardo, Bram Tremp, and Marcia Bassett. At 6 p.m., it's time for the All Together Now news show with a report about the art show that's up at the Opaca Gallery in Albany. And tune in for In My Room Radio and a special two-hour musical fest from Sadie Woods at 10 p.m. on the radio at 90.7 FM, WGXC.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page, and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
On Saturday, October 22nd, come out to Wave Farm and view the installations as part of WGXC's Fall Pledge Drive. Noon to 6 p.m. on Saturday, October 22nd, Wave Farm will welcome drop-in visitors for tours of the campus, including the WGXC Acre Studio and the many installations on the property that employ radio in some way. Also, community members and local nonprofit organizations can come by to record public service announcements to air on 90.7 FM, and members of the public can record a station ID for WGXC. Again, that's Wave Farm is open for visits on Saturday, October 22nd during the WGXC Fall Pledge Drive from noon to 6 p.m. Go to WGXC.org for more information, and we'll see you on Saturday, October 22nd at Wave Farm.
If you like music that's off the beaten path, and often off the beat, then tune in to Overlooked, the second and fourth Tuesday of the month, just after the noon news. You'll hear underplayed and overlooked music of all genres, continents, and omniverses, Overlooked on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Monday, September 12th. We are 69.8% of the way through the year. We have 11 days left until fall. Local early morning temperatures range from 60 degrees in Ashland to 64 in Kingston. Regional average soil temperature is 68 degrees. It's going to feel muggy today with dew points making it to 70 degrees. The thermometer reaches 79 at 4 p.m. A little before then, rain enters the region, getting stronger after dark. Don't complain, we need the water. We're still under drought conditions, more so in Columbia County than Greene, but everybody can use every drop that falls. After midnight, chances for storms show up, and we see a low temperature of 68 degrees. Tomorrow morning, rain chances get even stronger, and we will see a high of 79 at 4 p.m. Just after dark, rain chances disappear, and we watch the temperature drop to 56 degrees. Wednesday is looking dry and sunny with a high of 78. Overnight, we're going to see 52 degrees. Then a Thursday with cool conditions and a high of 70. Pollen levels for today will be low. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 4:53 a.m., low tide at 11:30 a.m., high tide again at 5:22 p.m., and low tide once again at 11:57 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 73 degrees, and the current will be strong. Sunset today will be at 6:59 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:28 a.m. Looking way up, we see flare chances are up with a 20% chance of M-class flares firing off today. Solar wind speed is currently 394.5 kilometers per second at 5.3 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 8 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 113. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Melissa Alfdermar and Tony Stone of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Early Electromix is a series to document the history of experimental electronic music from the 50s to the 80s. Pioneers who paved the way for what was to become techno, ambient, electronica, and most of what we are listening to. Essential Culture on air every Tuesday from 11 to 12 a.m.
World, I wanna see it more. I want to hear the dogs crying for water. I want to see the fish go belly up in the sea. And all those lemurs and all those tiny creatures. I want to see them burn. It's only 4 degrees. I wanna burn them, I wanna burn them. I wanna burn the sky, I wanna burn the breeze. I wanna see the animals die in the trees. Let's go, let's go. I wanna burn them.
New York State has been working to ensure disadvantaged communities aren't so vulnerable to the effects of climate change. However, as storms grow in power, it may not be enough that the state is bracing these communities. With sea levels expected to rise, numerous areas across the state could fall victim to more severe flooding. Deb Peck Kelleher with the Alliance for Clean Energy New York says this was foreshadowed when Superstorm Sandy hit New York almost a decade ago.
The New York infrastructure, a lot of it's underground, and as we saw in Superstorm Sandy, once the subway tunnels and the road tunnels get filled with water just because of a storm surge, it has a dramatic effect.
She adds urban planning is accounting for areas that are floodplains and other problems coastal regions face. According to a 2021 report from several state agencies, most barriers relate to having access to climate-smart programs like zero or low-emissions transportation and distributed energy efficiency. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration is predicting several storms in the 2022 hurricane season will have a similar intensity to Superstorm Sandy. While she feels the state's been proactive about climate change's effects, Kelleher knows there is still other work New York City must do.
The city is taking steps and needs to take steps for basement apartments, that we need to strategically retreat from areas that are no longer going to be able to support housing, and take a hard look at where those areas are going to be.
Kelleher feels communities should be planned with climate change's effects in mind, rather than simply bracing for what it may bring. Ultimately, the state's goal is to ensure people's safety amid a changing climate. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times. Twenty-one years after the deadliest terrorist attack on U.S. soil, Americans remember 9/11 with memorial services. There were tributes and moments of silence where the hijackers crashed commercial jets, killing more than 3,000 people. Loved ones of the victims read their names at Ground Zero in New York City.
Irina Buslow.
Milton G. Bustillo.
William M. Vihan.
Joshua Michael Piver.
Patrick McSweeney, Ladder 3.
Andrew Colabella's cousin was one of the six people killed in the earlier 1993 bomb attack on the World Trade Center. He made an emotional plea for solidarity.
Back then, no one cared if you were Republican, Democrat, age, gender, race, ethnicity. We were united. It took a tragedy to unite us. And I want to remind all of you there, it should not take another tragedy to unite our nation.
First Lady Jill Biden spoke at Shanksville, Pennsylvania, marking the crash of Flight 93. And President Joe Biden was at the site of the attack on the Pentagon, where he vowed that the U.S. will continue to root out terrorist plots. He also shared the words of condolence sent by the recently deceased Queen Elizabeth II after 9/11.
She pointedly reminded us, quote, "Grief is the price we pay for love."
Biden formally accepted the invitation to attend the Queen's funeral service on Saturday, September 19th. She passed away Thursday at the age of 96. Members of UK's Parliament took their oath of allegiance to King Charles III on Saturday.
"I shall strive to follow the inspiring example I have been set in upholding constitutional government and to seek the peace, harmony, and prosperity of the peoples of these islands and of the Commonwealth realms and territories throughout the world."
The King will be joined by new British Prime Minister Liz Truss at memorial services this week in Scotland, Northern Ireland, and Wales. In eastern Ukraine, Russian forces have been fleeing in disorder ahead of a breakthrough by a Ukrainian counteroffensive southeast of Kharkiv. Ukrainian officials say they have taken back 3,000 square kilometers over the last 5 days, including important supply crossroads. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says this could be a turning point in the war. In Congress, 72 House Democrats are pushing back against a plan to include changes to federal permitting laws and a funding bill to keep the government running after the end of the month. The side deal was negotiated by party leaders to win West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin's vote on the Inflation Reduction Act. Manchin has been fighting for a huge natural gas pipeline stalled in its path across West Virginia and Virginia. But in a letter to House leaders, progressives expressed opposition. They say the proposal to overhaul permitting laws, rewrite the Clean Water Act, and smooth pipeline approval would disproportionately impact low-income communities, indigenous communities, and communities of color. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our A-Trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Sad was rich and I was strong. From seed to tree I grew so tall. Through wind and rain I could not fall. But now my branches suffer, and my leaves don't offer poetry to men of song. Trees like me weren't meant to live, if all this world can give pollution. Trees like
here is this week's environmental news from WGXC. Go to the WGXC newsroom, wgxc.org, for more about these stories and others.
Roger Justin reports in the Times Union that Governor Kathy Hochul announced September the 4th that the Navanock Point wildfire in Minnewaska State Park Preserve in Ulster County has been contained after 8 days. The fire began August 27th after a suspected lightning strike and burnt over more than 140 acres of parkland, with more than 200 firefighters working to end the blaze. Hochul said, and I quote, "We took swift action, launched a coordinated response, and devoted every resource possible to help the first responders complete their mission. The emphasis over the coming days will be to address the areas of heat to achieve full control," end quote. Rain on September 4th and 5th should aid that process. The two Ulster County fires that broke out last week, Stony Kill and Wurtsboro, are now also fully contained. Minnewaska State Park Preserve will reopen on September 7th, although some trails will remain closed indefinitely. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Larry Rulison is reporting for the Times Union. National Grid is predicting home heating bills in upstate New York will increase 39% this winter, a hike of roughly $50 more per month than last year. Melanie Littlejohn, National Grid's Regional Vice President for Customer and Community Management, said, and I quote, "These prices are significantly higher than they were last year," end quote. National Grid said the increase is the result of record national gas prices, as well as the increased gas delivery rates recently approved by the State Public Service Commission. Customers are charged for both supply and delivery. The supply charge is set using wholesale gas prices, while the delivery rate is set by the PSC. National Grid said the average five-month home heating bill will be approximately $943 for the period from November through March, $263 higher than the cost over the same five-month period last year. About $231 of the increase is due to wholesale gas costs. National Grid further noted that monthly electricity bills will also go up about $23 or 22% each month this winter, since most electricity in New York is made burning natural gas. All told, the average National Gas Grid combined gas and electric bill will be $75 higher this winter compared to last. Littlejohn said, and I quote, "National Grid has many assistance programs available, as well as energy-saving strategies, resources, and tips. We are encouraging our customers to take action now before the cold weather arrives," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Liz Montgomery is reporting for Porcupine Soup. Forest rangers responded over the weekend to two separate calls for injured hikers, one who was found just feet from the edge of Catterskills Falls. Greene County 911 contacted the rangers on the afternoon of September the 3rd about a person with an unstable lower leg injury on the Mary's Glen Trail. Rangers responded along with rescue crews and located a 32-year-old woman from Washington, D.C., splinted her injured ankle, gave her crutches, and helped carry her to a waiting ambulance that transported her to Kingston Hospital. On the morning of September 4th, Greene County 911 contacted rangers with a report of a person falling from the top of Catterskills Falls. When the rangers responded, they located a 22-year-old man from New Jersey with an unstable right ankle injury. He was found at the top of Catterskills Falls in the creek, approximately 12 feet from the edge of the 260-foot high fall. After moving the injured person to a safer spot, rangers, Hunter Police, and Hunter Ambulance administered first aid and carried him to the trail. The man was eventually transported to Kingston via ambulance. And you can read that full story at porcupinesoup.com.
We're now joined by our friend Henry the Hudson Whale. Welcome back to the show, Henry. Henry, did you know there's a boat stuck in the Hudson River for 4 days? That's right, up by Fort Edward. The boat operator made a wrong turn and ended up on a rock ledge. Six people from out of the area were on the boat and had to be rescued. They're still trying to get the boat out. And officials predict it'll be next week sometime before that boat is out of the Hudson River. Meanwhile, all this weekend, September 9th and 10th, there are tugboats in the Hudson River, more so than usual, as the tugboat roundup begins. Bad news for Henry. The Gateway Tunnel project under the Hudson River won't be completed until 2035. That means lots of underwater banging. And we know how travel sounds underwater. Way better than in the air, because all the molecules are close together, and so the sound can travel through the molecules. Lots of noise in the Hudson River. The only good news to report this week in the Hudson River is all the work that the River Project is doing to bring back oysters. Oysters filter out all the bad stuff. That's right. We're ending on a good note, Henry. This has been your weekly environmental report about the Hudson River with our friend Henry the Hudson Whale.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined by Melissa Everett, who is the Executive Director of Sustainable Hudson Valley. And they are coordinating, hosting a Festival of Climate Solutions on September 17th to 25th. So, Melissa, you want to give us a little introduction to Sustainable Hudson Valley and what is this Festival of Climate Solutions about?
All righty. Thank you, Mark. So there are lots of environmental organizations that work on protecting resources. We work on helping people live and work differently to reduce our footprint. Our mission is all about speeding, scaling, jazzing up, and leveraging progress against climate change. But we are convinced that if we do that, we get a lot of other things right. We get the economy right. We get local planning right. We stop wasting resources and so forth. So Climate Solutions Week, inspired by New York City's Climate Week, my idea last year that I think has gotten a little bolder this year, it is a festival of ideas and a call to action. And It takes form through library workshops and dramatic readings and outdoor hands-on projects. And we've got a symposium run by Rockland County's Economic Development Office down at Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory, focusing on really interesting clean tech startups that are coming out of Columbia. We've got an event at Basilica Hudson on the 18th with Lila Connors, who's a filmmaker. She did Ice on Fire with Leonardo DiCaprio, and she's traveled around, you know, interviewing clean tech innovators all over the place, you know, from tiny low impact hydro to direct air capture to biochar. So we're really looking at the spectrum of things that are doable. And we find that that's such an antidote to despair and also an antidote to small thinking.
Now, looking at some of the list of the various events, one of my favorite events I worked on for many years was the issue of divesting from fossil fuels, which you see is on September 17th. And also one of the groups I interviewed maybe a year or two ago was from Marbletown, and they're talking about the low-cost climate innovations. So what were those two workshops or events about, and what are some of the others you might want to highlight?
Okay, yeah, it's a real spectrum of actionable stuff. The investment divestment thing, people, you know, you think your bank is just kind of neutral, it's just the bank, but they actually invest money in large capital projects. And you know, there's a big movement to pull banks and pension funds out of fossil fuel investments. So Michael Richardson from GreenFaith has really delved and helps people find alternative places to put their money, like Clean Energy Credit Union. Who knew there was such a thing? A Marbletown we've worked with for several years. We helped them to craft 100% renewable, basically a transition plan. And, you know, we started wanting to do it to happen yesterday. In fact, it's a 20-year plan, but it's going to get probably renewables into the majority by, you know, within 10 years. And they're helping people to sign up for community solar. We've got an energy coach. You know, we've done workshops with, you know, on EVs and charging and heat pumps. They're looking into a district geothermal loop. And I think a lot, you know, we can help any town to project their energy use, their electricity use, their number of vehicles, ballpark, you know, what their buildings are using, and just start figuring out, you know, where will you put the renewable energy and how will you build a consensus for it? So those, you got a good nose in picking those out.
So
let me just mention in schools, because everybody, you know, the young generation gets it and needs support and needs resources. So there's a couple, there's Eben Goodstein from Bard College has this workshop called Make Climate a Class for teachers. Any, whatever you teach, you know, even if it's classics or something. So that's, if any teachers are listening, that is really valuable.
So what are you hoping to come out of this week-long or 9-day-long festival?
We are looking to reach at least 1 million people, and we are looking to inspire people like crazy to realize what coordinated action can do. You know, people tend to think, well, either it's national policy or it's changing your light bulbs. And we think that the stuff in the middle, changing your town's streetlights, you know, and then changing its fleet and school buses, that there's a scale of action that is small enough for people to really plug in on and yet big enough to really matter. And so we just want to keep building and stoking that movement of innovators.
So how many of these events are in person versus virtual? And, you know, you talk about the Hudson Valley, how geographically, how widespread is this?
So it's north to Hudson at least, or actually several, the divestment workshops are sprinkled around Columbia, Dutchess County, and down to Palisades, almost to New York City. And I think 50-50 virtual and in person. A lot of libraries. There's a program called Library of Local that is about, you know, they've got tool lending and you know, all kinds of practical education about low-impact living. So libraries up and down the region.
Now, do you find that most people already understand, you know, what climate is about, climate change, and are looking for ways to help, or do you still need to do sort of basic climate 101 education for people?
Both. There's a study that happens every couple of years from Yale and George Mason universities that shows 58% or something of the public is either concerned or alarmed, very much gets it. There's another, you know, 30%+ who are kind of confused and don't know who to trust. And the deniers are something like 8%. In New York, since the state passed this very advanced, very well-conceived climate law in 2019, there has been organized pushback. And I'm, you know, sorry to say that, you know, organizations like the Propane Dealers Association of New York State have been behind, you know, a video that literally says they're coming for your furnace. There's a lot of confusion, a lot of disinformation, and yet some of the utilities, notably Con Ed, have taken a stand, we can do this, and they're making transition plans. So, you know, it's about amplifying the accurate information and the commitment, and, you know, also just standing up to disinformation.
Yeah, you mentioned the climate plan, and I will say one of the groups that's been doing a lot of the pushback, unfortunately, has been parts of the organized labor movement, you know, who are concerned about the loss of jobs.
That's so sad. I mean, you know, I get that if you've been delivering fuel for 30 years and you're making a high wage, you're not excited about being retrained to climb up on roofs and install solar panels for $16 an hour. But propane delivery trucks could be retrofitted to be electric and could be picking up compost, for crying out loud. So I think I just, let me have lunch with a labor union leader just once, please. Because I think there's an opportunity for vision and creativity that we're just not achieving yet.
So we've been talking to Melissa Everett, Executive Director of Sustainable Hudson Valley, the Festival of Climate Solutions, for September 17th to 25th. Melissa, if people want more information, how best can they do that?
www.sustainhv, as in Hudson Valley, .org, and that links to hvclimatesolutionsweek.org. And, you know, plug in, spread the word, lots of fun things to do.
Thank you very much, and this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
See the warning.
Think about the things that we should have done before, the way the things are going.